accession number 9338, reel 9.
Doug Turner, tape 9. I wonder if you knew Mr. Bosshart?
Yes, indeed. I remember Alfred Bosshart quite well. We used to call in there regularly on our way through his little mission station and would always be assured of a very warm welcome by he and his family. A man who had quite a deep experience himself when he was taken prisoner by the communists, but who remained above what perhaps ordinary people might have felt, had utterly no resentment towards his captors, and I understand that later on they spoke quite highly of him.
I wonder what the missionaries thought of the unit. You know, did you get any impression of what they made of you?
Yes, I think many of them certainly we were very close to, possibly because we were also Europeans with expressing our Christian belief. Others, I think, had some doubts, as many Christian and church-going people do in England, about pacifism, not fully able to understand it, and thinking maybe that we were a pretty weird lot. I think there was one occasion when one missionary was trying to explain to another missionary just who the FAU were, and he said, well, there are a bunch of people whom only God can tell what to do.
Did they understand your pacifism?
No, I think they had the usual attitude, or unless they were pacifists themselves, of course, and some of them were. They had the usual attitude, as many people in the West do, towards pacifism. It was beyond them, and didn't abide by their Old Testament understanding of Christianity.
Were they always tolerant of the fact that you behaved like sort of normal men? From what I can gather, you used to drink and you used to smoke. And is it right that you sometimes made the odd oath?
Oh, yes, indeed. I think there was one amusing incident when one convoy was carrying some missionary passengers, and they met up with another convoy, you know, where members of whom were lying under their trucks, and on our the arriving convoy greeted them and said, "Well, what's up?" to the character under the truck, and to receive a stream of abuse in reply, which led to the passenger carrying convoy hastily gathering his flock together and saying, "Well, I think we'd better proceed onwards, don't you? He seems okay, he seems to be able to cope," leaving the missionaries scratching their heads and eyeing one another in a little bit of consternation.
Did you have any knowledge or awareness of the communist areas while you were in the West?
I didn't myself, but certainly after the war ended, then the unit develop links with the communist regime. This commenced first of all by the unit being able to take up a convoy of UNRWA supplies to the communist areas after a long and protracted period of negotiation. This was agreed to, although I understand that at times they had to travel by night because they could have been bombed by nationalist aircraft. Later on, at a later stage, the unit was able to send up a team to work in the International Hospital in Yan'an. And
yes.
This led to quite an experience at a later stage when the nationalist forces took Yan'an and the communist government had to retreat, and Our medical team retreated with them and were, to all intents and purposes, lost to the rest of the world for quite a few months. Indeed, one young couple had their very first baby in a Chinese cave.
That comes into the story a bit later, does it?
Yes, that comes
yes,
into
I'll
the
ask
story
you about that
later.
When we get into Hunan, I think, isn't it?
Yes.
Yeah. While you were talking about UNRWA, you know that this trip up to the north was through UNRWA. What were the relations like between UNRWA and the Friends Ambulance Unit in West China?
Well, in West China, we hadn't really developed relationships then. I think these began to develop when we began to move into North China, which of course had been the area occupied by the Japanese.
Right.
West China didn't really come into the situation at that particular time.
Right, I'll ask you about that later on, I think. But while we're still in the West, did you have any knowledge of, or did you ever see any of the Chinese leaders, Chiang Kai-shek, or, you know, any of the Sung family in West China?
I never did myself. On one occasion when in Nanking, I did meet one of Chiang Kai-shek's sons, but that was just incidental.
Could I ask you now about your move into the west, the more eastern areas?
Into the north,
the north, yes, north.
Well, as the work slowly began to draw to an end in West China, we had to look at the unit's future, and at our conference we went into this very deeply, and it became quite apparent that the unit did not wish to come to an end, whilst the unit in other parts of the world were distinctly closing. We in China felt we wanted to carry on, and we changed our name at the appropriate time from the Friends Ambulance Unit to the Friends Service Unit, giving perhaps quite a different focal point to the future, that we were no longer a medically oriented unit. We were wanting to continue in China on a long-term basis.
Why was that?
In other fields.
Why was that?
Well, I think we'd already established such a deep commitment to China, both as a unit and both many of us as individuals. The thought of going back to a life of mediocrity at home didn't appeal to us, and there was a strong segment of us who wished to carry on, even if this meant going back home and then returning again. The needs of China, of course, was becoming more and more apparent with the withdrawal of the Japanese in the rehabilitation, particularly of hospitals, in the North China fields. With the return of the refugees, there seemed ample scope for us to become involved in helping them with their needs.
Could I now establish which areas of China were covered by the Friends Ambulance or the Friends Service Unit? If you could explain
in this new development.
Yeah, could you delineate the western areas for me?
Yes, I think the west was largely centred upon Yunnan, Guizhou, and Sichuan, Chongqing areas. West China, we regarded that as the West China region. We now move over some 2,000 or 3,000 miles to the North China fields, particularly Hunan. There were small teams, I think, at Hankou Hospital, and also we were beginning to move our headquarters at this stage down to Shanghai rather than Hunan, as it had been for the last year or so.
And when you moved to Honan, what was the relationship like between the communist and the Kuomintang? Was this still a sort of period of uneasy unity?
Yes, very much so. General Marshall, the U.S. representative in China, was certainly doing his utmost to try to find a modus vivendi between the two sides, and was flying back and forth between Yan'an and the Kuomintang areas. We certainly hoped that things would develop, and but the political situation and military situation was becoming more and more intense. Mutual accusations were pouring out from both sides that the other side was breaking the agreement. And who is to say who was innocent and who not in this issue?
Could I ask you about the state of Honan, you know, the areas you went to? When you returned, was it late 1945 or early 1946?
I went up to Honan in 1946. By this time, we had entered a small city called Jungmu, which lay halfway between the prime cities of Kaifeng and Zhengzhou. And it was then on the banks of the Yellow River. The Yellow River, if I may go back, had been diverted during the war against the Japanese, and it had taken this new course, and flowing through the city of Jungmu and sweeping away in the process of many, many hundreds of villages, and a whole segment of the city of Jungmu as well. We decided that we would open up a program here, a rehabilitation program, as the refugees were now beginning to flood back into their old homes.
Had the river been put back on course by
At
now?
At the same time, a rather well-known American engineer, Todd, known to all and sundry as Todd Almighty, but a very skilled engineer, was busily engaged in re-diverting the river back onto one of its previous old courses. An amazing engineering development, and ultimately it succeeded, and slowly we began to become aware that the river, which was pouring down its heavy swollen waters just a few yards from our back door, was becoming smaller and smaller until ultimately became just a mere trickle.
Had the people suffered much in that area from what you could gather?
Yes, indeed. Not a place had been left unscathed, and we arrived in this little city consisting, I suppose, of perhaps a dozen houses still standing, if that, and we were fortunate in being able to rent one of the bigger places, which we used as a hospital, and then we started up a clinic and a milk feeding centre for the people as they began to come back, and this was very warmly appreciated indeed. And then we moved out to one of the little villages nearby, where we began to establish a school, small clinic, in due course a small agricultural development station. I think one of the most exciting times of my initial period there was one wandering through the town one day. I was called in by a mother to look at her baby, and as I looked at the baby, it became clear to me that it was in a severe state of dehydration. I had never before seen a case of cholera, though of course it was very widespread. But I had never actually seen a case, and it looked very much like to me, however, that this was a case of cholera. And if so, then it was pretty obvious it was going to spread in no time. And I think it was one of the aspects of perhaps our way of thinking and our training that we just didn't leave things to chance. I immediately contacted headquarters in Zhengzhou, and in no time at all they had responded. They sent down a team of members, and we began to inoculate many thousands of people. And as we did so, cholera broke out, the epidemic broke out with just the way cholera epidemics do break out. It spread everywhere. I compare this with thinking today with our huge structures, and wonder whether they would be able to cope in just the same way as we coped, at a very simple level. The immediate response I received was amazing. There was no hesitation. I just said, I think a cholera epidemic is going to break out, and the message was picked up straight away. I wonder whether this always happens in our own society. I don't think it does. We spent many long hours after that sitting up late into the night with patients being brought in. We converted one of the sections of the of our hostels into a ward, and we dealt with many hundreds of cases. To my recollection, I think only one small baby actually died whilst in our care, and that was too far gone when it was brought in.
That must have been quite a new experience for people, having a medical centre in an area like that. Would that have been so, you know, to have had a community health service which you were setting up?
Oh, yes, I think so. Following on from that, we soon had a very healthy little clinic going, and for peasant nurses, for young girls who were extremely good, showed themselves capable of coping with all sorts of emergencies. We employed two local Chinese doctors and instituted a very vigorous barefoot doctor campaign for many, many miles around.
So you did quite a lot of education as
yes,
well?
Indeed. Yes, indeed. We had teams going out on trek, going out with an ox wagon and staying away for perhaps 3 or 4 weeks on end. Later on, the unit developed a very large Calorazar campaign, treating many, many thousands of cases of this terrible disease over the whole areas of Hunan.
How easy was it, you know, to sort of instill in the Chinese the need for sort of sanitary methods?
It was a very slow job. Because of the cholera epidemic, I made it my unofficial duty to walk along the streets of Zhengmo every day and make sure that all the sellers of food kept their wares covered. Whilst they didn't welcome my appearance, they very, very grabbed hold of a cloth as soon as they saw me and spread it over their foodstuffs. Quite unofficial, of course, but it worked, at least whilst I was around. Very unofficial, of course. I had no right or to do this whatsoever, but it worked.
You were sort of teaching them how disease transmits itself, were
yes,
you?
Yes. Mm. I made it very clear to them, you know, that I regarded their behaviour in leaving their foodstuffs uncovered as very irresponsible. Whether it had any real effect or not, I don't know. I think one of the more delightful aspects of the work was the children who used to come along every morning to receive their glass of powdered milk. They would line up. And we had a register, and we would weigh them at the beginning of the campaign, and then we would weigh them at monthly periods, and they certainly began to put on weight. And we also taught them to clean their teeth, and it was a great delight to see these lines of small children from 3 or 4 years of age busily brushing away their teeth and then opening their mouth and showing their teeth to you. One humorous incident I do recall, we would call out their names from our register. This was usually done by Chinese medical students who were working with us at the time. And on one small boy being called out, he promptly came forward, and the young medical student suddenly burst out laughing, screaming with laughter. And I looked across and said, "Well, you know, what's the joke?" And she was, tears were running down her face, and she again spoke to the small boy, and he very innocently said, "Yes, sir, that's my name, Xiao Chor, Xiao Chor." And she says, "What sort of Xiao Chor?" And he says, "Well, Xiao Chor." And I said, "Well, what's all the scream?" She said, "Well, he said his name is Xiao Chor." Now, this might mean, interpreting in the tones of the locality, it might mean a number of things. But she said, "It really is Xiao Chor, which means little smell." And she thought this was a wonderful joke. And the little boy, he took it quite seriously. I mean, his name was Little Smell. What's strange in that?
Did you use at all any Chinese methods of medicine, you know, the herbal remedies, acupuncture? Did that come into your program at all?
We didn't, but our local Chinese doctors, who were untrained in Western methods, were traditional Chinese doctors, and they were superb. They could do carry out quite responsible operations such as cataract and things like this. I have no doubt that they also had used their own methods, which was quite acceptable to us, if they worked. We were not at all immune to using local methods if they worked, though I wouldn't know a great deal about this myself.
Did you find it was sometimes difficult, you know, the sort of culture shock between the British and the Chinese? I was wondering about our policy of hospitalisation and nursing. Would that have been quite foreign to Chinese people, to come to a place, have a bed, and have someone who wasn't their family nursing them?
No, I don't think so at all. I think this was quite acceptable. I mean, they were only too pleased to be treated. If we did ever find it necessary to keep people in, then of course it was a responsibility of the family to feed them. That's traditional anyway. But otherwise, I think things went very well. At a later stage, as our program developed and we began to get more financial resources coming in and UNRWA aid, we undertook the task of building a complete hospital in Jiangmu.
How many beds would that have taken?
I think that was about 40-bed hospital, and we built it ourselves. One of our members undertook the task of making himself the architect, and he worked exceedingly hard.
What did you build it with? What materials did you use? How would you have built this hospital?
Well, we built it of local bricks, and then the what was regarded as a rather Nissen-type building called Quonset Hut. These were shaped metal roofs, I believe. and we made it a two-story hospital. Local material and equipment which UNRWA was bringing in.
Was there any leprosy in this area?
Not to my knowledge, no. No, I never. I wouldn't have known leprosy had I seen it, of course. But I don't ever consciously remember seeing leprosy cases, although undoubtedly there were in the big cities.
Did you do anything to stimulate village industry? I mean, was this part of your programme?
Yes, we undertook a whole range of activities here on a cooperative basis. Cotton carding, weaving, brick making, schools, a whole range of activities like this. We, in the villages, we formed little cooperatives amongst the peoples, draft loan schemes in order for them to purchase animals and begin so that they could begin to plough their lands again, and at the same time educational schemes through simple film strips.
And would that have been just for children or for adults
No,
as well?
this covered adults primarily. As usual, there were problems. We made it a part of our conditions of our loans that they should begin to understand cooperative principles, and this they all agreed to at our meetings with them. And then questions were asked, well, if, for example, a farmer couldn't attend, would it be all right if he sent in a substitute? To which we, yes, that was okay. At least it showed goodwill until we found that meetings were beginning to be attended by nothing else but children. We then had to look again at our regulations and make it quite clear that if cooperative principles were to be understood, then the farmers had to attend. So it appeared.